NFT.
NFT.
NFTs.
NFTs.
Non-fungible tokens, or NFTs, are exploding in popularity.
This is Zen Chats. I am Zeneca. Let's talk NFTs. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Zen Chats. I'm Zeneca, and I'm here with Carlini 8. A person that I've seen in the space, who's been in the space for a very long time. I'm really thrilled to speak to the founder of Penelope's Country Club Project, ex-co-founder of NFT Boxes, which was founded by Pranksy, and just someone who I think is a big brain in the space, always posting hot takes on Twitter and interesting insights, and I'm really thrilled to be here chatting with. But first of all, we're getting into all the background, but first of all, hello, welcome. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to chatting NFTs.
Yeah, I mean, we were chatting sort of off air that, you know, we could chat for hours and hours and hours. There's so much to talk about when it comes to NFTs, and that's one of the great things about it. But I always like to begin with asking for what I call like your origin story. How did you sort of like, what did you do before all of this madness of Web3 and NFTs? And then how did you get into this world?
So before NFTs, I was technically a professional gambler. So I would take advantage of offers that gambling sites would put out, like welcome offers or reload offers. And I'd work out if it was an EV plus move to do this offer and then just do those offers on mass scale. It started out as something called... it turned into effectively what the gambling companies would call bonus abuse. They didn't like it because they're putting these bonuses out to lure you in, so then you lose your monthly salary to them. Whereas if you're only doing the offers that they try and use to lure you in, you can make money. So I was, you know, it's when you say professional gambler, it feels wrong because, you know, I'm not a poker table or anything like that. I was just grinding offers, but
that's amazing. Technically, I used to do that as well. I did that. So I was a professional poker player, and I mean, since 2005, I guess. Maybe 2004, and then I think, you know, running in those circles, you started to see people who were doing, you know, blackjack bonuses, where you get the bonus, and then I play perfect strategy and you could make money. And I remember at a certain point there was slot machines that you could find an edge on, because you'd get like, you know, $1,000 bonus, deposit $1,000, get $1,000 to play with. And then if you played like a slot machine game at the end of like the rotation, there'd be like an option to like flip it, like a 50-50 outcome. And there was no edge on that for the house. So if you could just bet and you could just keep doing that, and like that could, you know, result in the turnover required to deposit, to withdraw the bonus. And I remember like setting up just automatically, you set them up to like automatically spin, and I'd go to sleep and wake up, and they just, sometimes you'd have crazy amounts of money, and most of the times you'd lose, but over the long run, you sort of take the house's money. But did you ever do
exactly slots? Exactly. So the slots, cause they sort of got wise to it and started doing things like max spin sizes, and you're not allowed to do those edgeless 50-50s at the end. But it would end up in, get this bonus. So even if it's 1,000 for 1,000, you get your 2,000, whack it all on a single number on roulette. And then if that hits, you then grind out for a very long time. So, you know, 18 hours wagering that an auto click is just spinning away. Wow. And obviously you lose on the roulette spin a lot. And I don't know, something about doing those big spins definitely helped coming into NFTs and sort of having the risk tolerance that we needed.
Yeah. I mean, it's no coincidence that there's a lot of like gamblers and poker players and people in the NFT and crypto space, I think, because we've got that tolerance for the variance and the swings that a lot of quote-unquote normal people, sane people, I like to say, don't necessarily have. It's not a normal thing to just like, oh, I just lost $20,000 or like whatever. It's like, oh, okay, that's just another day at the office, but you kind of need that at a certain point or you drive yourself insane.
And we're seeing quite a lot of people right now are being driven insane. And, you know, Twitter's probably at the lowest engagement levels for a long time for NFTs. People are leaving at the moment. They just can't.
Yeah.
They just can't take it, I guess.
Bear market things. So I mean, we're recording this in the 9th of June and 2022. And it's just like, it's been bearish for a couple of months. And like you said, engagement's real low, sentiment is low. But it's nice to see the people who are sticking around that, you know, are building and doing, just keeping on. And yeah, these are the people, I think, that, you know, if you're here now, if you listen to this like live, if you're still listening to NFT podcasts during a bear market, if you're following NFT Twitter, then you're in a pretty good spot, I'd say. Just keep doing it and eventually things will turn around, I think.
I mean, that's exactly what we thought before. So I was in NFTs 2017, CryptoKitties, a lot of people joined in that December, like a huge amount compared to how many then stuck around. CryptoKitties was the first to 100,000 unique wallets, and that's not holders like we look at now. That's 100,000 that have ever interacted with the ecosystem. So if you owned a CryptoKitty and then sold it, you didn't have one, but you still counted in those stats as owning one at some point.
Yeah.
And so many people joined at that point, left, and then came back in 2021 for the bull run. Mm-hmm. Whereas those people who stayed from point A to point B are now the people that everyone knows. They know their name, they look up to, you know, these people who have been buying NFTs for so long, they know the space. Mm-hmm. And people think, oh, they're geniuses. They saw this coming. No, we were down bad more than everyone is down bad now. I can tell you that. We thought we were crazy and NFTs were never, you know, we believed in NFTs, but the rest of the world weren't. And for a long time, we thought everyone else was the crazy ones. And then, you know, sometimes it dips in. Are we actually the crazy ones?
Yeah. That's sort of, I think, like a lot of people might be feeling right now. We sort of like skipped ahead because I interrupted to get excited about gambling and stuff. But how did you get from, you know, being a professional gambler to getting into crypto and NFTs? Was it 2016, 2017 that you got in? Was it earlier?
Well, I was in crypto a tiny bit in 2015, a bit more in 16. And then early 17 is when I made like a bigger move in, I guess. And somewhere before 2015, minus 2 years up to 2015, I mined some Bitcoin. But I can't remember exactly when. All I know is I was at my old house and I moved into the next house in 2015. So it was before that. So I was in crypto, but Bitcoin didn't interest me too much. I sort of got the whole point of it. I just didn't like that I can do anything useful. And then Ethereum came along, you know, tried to get rid of the middleman, sort of. That was the sort of early big push, was just get rid of that middleman for everything, before sort of people were really talking about everything that smart contracts could do. And I was, before NFTs, I was degening in lots of different tokens on Ethereum, you know, the next X, the next Y, the next Z. Airbnb, but on Ethereum, the next big supercomputer, you know, loads of these different things. And then one day I was in hospital, my wife was in hospital, but I was there as well. We had to stay the night, and I was in a big chair, hospital chair, couldn't sleep. It's like 2 a.m., had my laptop on one of those hospital beds that rolls under the tables that rolls under the bed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a huge gap. And I was put my laptop on it. I was just scrolling through. I think it was Discord, and someone had pointed me towards CryptoKitties. Can't remember who or how or why, or maybe I just found an article. And from that night, I was just, for a solid month, I was breeding CryptoKitties. And based on all the different wallets I used in 2017, I probably did the most NFT transactions out of everyone, because there weren't many projects to do it on. There was basically Punks and CryptoKitties, and I've bred the most CryptoKitties when you add up my multiple wallets, which leads me to believe probably, you know, not a baseless claim to say, I probably did the most NFT transactions in 17. And then there was a huge crash. Crypto crashed. I think Bitcoin went towards the end of that year, and Ethereum kept going a bit until January. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, ETH was, what did it hit? Maybe 1.4K, and then all the way, just slowly bleed all the way down to $80.
Yeah.
But I wasn't full time. It was a hobby. It was a hobby that consumed a lot of my time. And the gambling job was mainly setting up auto clickers and VMs and all of this sort of stuff. So that wasn't engaging. It wasn't exciting. It was just grinding for money.
Yeah.
So I was grinding for money, gambling, and I was degenerating in NFTs for fun, I guess. and it was...
That's amazing.
You just felt like you were in something new and early, but you were early in a way, you know, right now everyone says, oh, we're early. But I would argue NFTs are a sure thing at this point.
Yeah.
Back then we didn't really, you know what we were going for. We were just having fun and just hooked and stuck around constantly since.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, I was around a little bit in 2016, 2017, but I remember I was still very much playing poker and interested by Ethereum, smart contracts, dApps. It all sounded great to me, but it was all very theoretical. And we had this one friend who I played poker with every day, and he bought a CryptoKitty. And we basically just made fun of him mercilessly for like two years. And we'd be like, how's that digital cat going for you? And
well, that was me with every single friendship group I had for many years.
Oh man, now he's like, well, now you have your own digital cats.
I know, full circle. And even the breeds that we have, we picked breeds as sort of, I guess, the fur or the skin of other projects. And I picked ones from CryptoKitties, sort of a homage to my roots.
Well, let's fast forward then a bit from the CryptoKitty mania of 2017 to, like, I guess when you had the idea for Penelope's Country Club and sort of why you wanted to launch an NFT project of your own.
Well, I guess that really starts with NFT boxes. So there was an idea sort of floating around a friendship Discord for a year, maybe even 2 years, of just this box with NFTs in it, and you open it and there were loads of different permutations. And the one that was most commonly spoken about was, we've got between us hundreds of thousands of NFTs. What if we just put them in boxes and sold them to people? Like, you know, blind loot boxes. And that was the one that kept being spoken about, mainly because, you know, most friendship chats boil down to, how do we sell our bags?
Right.
One day, you know, this topic cropped up again, and I just messaged Pranksy and said, hey, should we actually do this, but do it properly? So I knew Pranksy had connections with artists, so he could, I guess, source the right work to go inside the box, and he could sell, and I could do all the sort of boring back-end stuff. I could set up the company, I could find the dev, I could get the website set up, I could link it all together, and then I could build the community. And doing NFT boxes, I caught the building bug. Like, I really enjoyed it. It felt like those early CryptoKitties days again, because I was sort of working towards something and really trying to build it up, and it was fun. And then we kind of kept, because the business was effectively split in half, I wanted to do stuff that would, I guess, gamify the art, but make the community happy. And Pranksy, who was talking to the artists every day, was like, I can't go and tell these artists that we're going to gamify their art, because the art is the utility. And sort of, we were 50-50 in a properly set up UK business. So it wasn't like one of us had 51% and could make the call. And I just eventually it just got to me saying, look, shall I just sell you my 50%? Because I want to work on the community side and I can't if it's conflicting with the artist side. So maybe you have the connections and the, you know, promotional self to really push boxes and I can go off and do my own thing. So I was caught with a bug. It was never about, you know, trying to profit or anything like that. Because when you look at how Penelope's has been run, I'm down on Penelope's because it all went back pretty much. So it was really about trying to build what I thought NFT should be. You know, doing it properly is how I try and phrase it. So Penelope's was technically born about March 2021. Had lots of different iterations until we then finally launched. I think it was July. We started to mint, and it was just great again. It was like the early days of NFT boxes or the early days of CryptoKitties. I just felt that fun again.
And you mentioned that. Everything you got sort of went back into it and you're down on it. Can you talk through, like, because there's such an interesting structure set up in terms of like the funds and how that all works. And can you like maybe talk through that for people who aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, of course. So we have something called the Kitty Vault, which is a collection of NFTs. It's effectively a wallet with, I think it's currently after the bear, about 820 Ethereum at floor prices. It was above 1,000 at one point. Keep in mind, we took 800 Ethereum from our initial sale, and we only take 1% for us on secondary. So the Kitty Vault is currently valued at more than we took in as a company. And that's not ours, that's the community's. It's effectively fractionalized into 100,000 different pieces. And one of those pieces is inside every Penelope, is also inside every airdrop. We did 8 airdrops, one a month, with sort of dual utility. And one of those pieces of utility being it's a fraction of this Kitty Vault. There are also, I guess, other draws. 6 of them are physicals. So you can burn this NFT and we will send you, depends what it is, but we've got a hoodie which has an NFT attached, and the NFT can only be pooled to whoever has the hoodie. So that's born out of, I had frustration at, I've got all 3 Furocious trainers, and it kind of annoyed me that I sold the NFTs in the run-up to CloneX, and now I see those trainers every day. They're right next to me. They're within touching distance. And yeah, you know, I like them to look at their art, and they're framed and they're, you know, nicely there. But I'm an NFT guy and I've sold the NFT. Why do I have these? Mm. So the hoodie is based on, it's IYK is a company that's been working on this. And the NFT is pooled to whoever has the hoodie with them physically. So it can then also be used for lots of fun things like, you know, proof of owning something while out and about can be used in lots of different ways. And that's, you know, that's one of the airdrops that we've done, and we're trying to
keep it short.
I could do half an hour on the hoodie.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so curious. I'm going to ask, how does it work on like a technical level?
Let me grab one here. There's in the arm, there's like a patch where there's a, is it NFC sort of tag inside?
Yeah.
And by putting your phone next to it, it starts a transaction. But they've modified the NFT. So you can't send the NFT anywhere. It can only be pulled by that NFC.
Wow. Yeah.
So it is truly sort of proof of, I guess, when you really break it down, it's proof of ownership of the NFC, because someone could rip up a hoodie.
Cut obviously. It out, yeah.
Yeah. But because we're talking about hoodies and, you know, it's not the Mona Lisa, so who's going to be trying this?
yeah.
It's effectively almost certainly proof of hoodie. And that will be, you know, you can give people airdrops based on owning this physical. You can let them into certain places or the club. So just thinking, you know, Bored Apes, they've got their Miami clubhouse. You could have certain areas that you can only get to if you've got this physical, which can be proven that you own and you don't have to take it with you. So there are lots of interesting things that you can do with that. It's one of those things that, you know, it sounds like, oh, why would you do that? And then when you think about potential use cases, they don't exist yet, but that's pretty much this whole space. We're all thinking about what we can do.
Yeah. No, I mean, it sounds like so many people talk about like token gating live events and stuff like that, and token proof, you know, they've done some pretty cool things at the moment, but I think this is almost an even more frictionless way. Like if you own this physical thing, you own the NFT, right? And you can go XYZ or get discounts, you know, at certain places, I think is something that we're going to see a lot of in the future.
Exactly,
just so cool.
And that's one of our eight airdrops. Two of them were companions. So what we call tier three. So, you know, you're bored ape kennel club sort of level, the dogs, are kittens and grandmas. And something cool we did with the grandmas, just sort of to showcase NFT tech, I guess. It's not one of these things where you're like, oh, what's the use there? But if you have the same number Penelope, so the main collection, and grandma, this grandma cat will hold up a frame in front of her with the cat inside it, like all proud of her grandcat.
That's so cool.
And what that's done is it's made an interesting change in how people view the NFTs, which I've never really seen before. Because if you mint an NFT, that is yours. That is your NFT. But what we're seeing in our Discord is people are tagging people and going, hey, blah-de-blah, you've got my grandma. No, they've got their own grandma. But because of this little sort of psychological thing we've done, they're seeing it as theirs, which is just an interesting sort of flip on how NFTs can be viewed.
So is it with the claim or the airdrop for the grandmas, was it if you had the cat, you got the corresponding grandma? And then some people then went on to sell the cat, or was it like a random distribution of grandma?
So it was random. Trying to so find you it. Got.
Oh, that's wild. Yeah.
So I think we've got like a leaderboard of people who have managed to match up the most grandmas. And I think what's the lead most? With 17 is Coco Bear.
Yeah.
And that's purely because he's our top holder. He has 320 and he just minted 17 matches.
That sounds about right. That sounds like
everyone else is grinding so hard, and he still has he's just double everyone else without trying.
That's amazing. Just whale things, yeah. That's cool. It sounds like you're doing. I mean, you've done with the Kitty Vault and with all the airdrops and the physical stuff and this stuff. It sounds like you're really doing some different things, which I think is something that I've always appreciated about the project. I remember, I think I missed the mint, but it would have been like mid last year. No, it would have been like August or something. I heard about the project and I did some research and I was like, this sounds different. This sounds cool. There's actual, I think I remember thinking there's actual utility, or like, this is not just another PFP project. And I was like, it sounds great. I want to just be part of it. And, you know, unfortunately as things go, there's just been so many projects and so much stuff happening that I haven't like kept up with basically any project that I've been in. But it's so cool to hear that you've continued innovating, I guess is the word.
There's just no time. When you're working on your own thing, it's so hard to keep up with even just another one, let alone you know the thousands that we see, and then the hundreds that make it past the first month, and then the tens that are here in a year. It's so hard. And I guess the best thing I think that we've done is our ENS subdomains. So my Twitter username is carlini8.pcc.eth, for example, which is my wallet, my identity, my favorite project, my favorite chain. It's profile picturing my username. It's useful because you can search .pcc.eth on Twitter and effectively do a better ape follow ape. because you can just type it in and you see the whole community there. And also it can be integrated into Web2 APIs. So if anyone's on our Discord, they can get a hint of any PCC that they aren't following. And also they'll get a list of fake PCCs, because people saw that, you know, there's about 450 to 500.pcc.eths on Twitter, and people saw that this was happening, and they could get 450 to 500 free followers. So they just put .pcc.eth, and our bot now tells you when you followed a fake person who's just trying to get in the system. So you can then go and unfollow it. You know, personally, I don't care. You know, if people want to do it, they're promoting us. But some people, it really got to. Like, they were like, oh, I feel like I've been tricked. Yeah. So we've just given them the possibility to unfollow.
That's amazing. Yeah, I haven't seen too many other people or projects sort of adopt the ENS subdomains. Why do you think that is? Do you think it just hasn't caught on yet, but it will? Or is it some other reason?
Well, the way ENS do it natively is kind of pointless, in my opinion, for us. So it's not pointless for an ENS subdomain owner, but it is pointless for a project, an NFT project, because what they currently do when you subdomain them is they just make more NFTs. So if we did it that way and you got zeneca.pcc.eth, you can then sell that separately. You could sell your PCC and still keep the ENS subdomain. So we had to build a custom resolver which attaches that subdomain to a cat. So technically, I don't own my subdomain. My cat does. And if I send that cat anywhere, the subdomain follows. And that's the most powerful part of it all for projects, because what that is proof of ownership. It proves that you are in that club. Because if I am carlinier.pcc.eth on Twitter and someone's trying to impersonate me and they don't say that as the wallet, that should raise, I know it won't raise red flags because of the space we're in, and, you know, people don't often think too much, but that should be an instant red flag, because that is not my wallet. And when a subdomain is sort of hexagoned on Twitter, when you can hexagon your username, which I'm sure will come eventually, that is so much harder to fake. Like, I can't remember if you've still got it, but you had the ape and the Zen Academy background, and it was a fake. You just minted it, right?
I just minted it, yeah. Paid like $50 in gas to get a Twitter PFP. A hexagon, yeah.
But if you wanted to do that with a subdomain, you'd have to own a similar one. Like, PCC is actually quite good because it's hard, but, you know, if you had an L, you could put a capital I or, not capital one or something like that. But you would actually have to own the ENS domain to then create this subdomain to then trick people. And
that's so cool.
It is good. And we've seen people start to try recently. There have been a couple that have just taken it completely, and that's fine. It's like, I think line 50 of our contract says this should work for all ERC-721s. Feel free to use it. Because our philosophy is, if someone else takes it and maybe they improve it, we then take it back. You know, it's just a community constantly upgrading this thing. We've seen, I think, Top Dog Beach Club recently put it out, but they took our contract and took out the powerful part to make it, instead of costing $6, it now costs $3 to mint. And I think what they've done is they've halved the minting, but now you mint something completely pointless, because if you own one of their NFTs, anyone, and I mean anyone with an Ethereum address, can mint a name to you. So I trolled our dev because he owned one of their cats, and I sent matichlover.tdbc.eth, and I minted that to him via the contract because he's not the biggest fan of Matic, and in reply he minted ETH Maxi to me, and I was fine with that. You know, I'll take that all day. So you know, some people will change it to fit their needs, and we thought about it, the pros and cons, massively. And CyberKongs, for example, have announced they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And Owl, their dev, was, I worked with him on NFT boxes, so we were talking about it, and he said, I'm going to do it this way. And I said, please don't. I've thought about this for literally months at this point. You're taking away the main point. And after, you know, some pretty deep chats, he accepted. And I think that it's Owl, so he's always going to add something cool and different. But fundamentally, it will be pretty similar when it comes out, I think.
Nice. It's always cool to see other people adopting something that you've created and put out there for other people to use and build upon. I think that's kind of the Web3 ethos. Yeah.
My litmus test is always, imagine if Bored Apes did it, how many .BAYC.EVs would we see overnight? I think over 2,000. Overnight.
You're probably right.
A week, maybe five.
Yeah. It would spread like wildfire.
And again, can't be faked. So, you know these people who just buy verified Twitter accounts and then just, you know, they're 16, they've got a YouTube account with 1 million followers and suddenly they're liking everyone's posts. They wouldn't get much. Well, they'd still get traction.
Unfortunately, but maybe a little less. what do you think about this whole free mint meta we're in? Just changing directions a bit.
I think it's fun. You know, people are enjoying it. But one key part people always forget is it's only free at mint. I remember lots of, you know, Beanie comments back in the day about Bloot when he was defending that it was free. Yes, but everyone who bought at the top got wrecked.
Yeah.
And my thinking here is it's not going to last a long time because people are just losing money because there are very few that are going to make it. And that's just proven every day because there are so many and the team have no money. They have no incentive to stick around. There's nothing to build on. All they've done is free minted in a day. Now there are multiple exceptions. There are big projects that are now going free mint purely because they want people involved and they don't actually need the money. So we were working with for quite some time Gino's Big Town Chef. And they changed to a free mint. But they are completely separate to like this meta, I would say, because they had been building for a long time, had a price point and changed to free mint because of sort of the ecosystem now. And they have the team and they will keep building. They're not I'll do it, you know.
Yeah.
Just some artist who's put it all together and that is definitely just to move on. And the goblins that sort of kickstarted it all, they are clearly very different. This has all been they must have been working for months on this. And then just put it out to the world. Whoever it is, be it someone who knows the BAYC founders, someone who knows Beeple, someone who knows, can't remember which sort of code base it was that was mentioned. I've seen lots of theories.
Yeah, I can't wait to find out more just because.
Do you think though, would you reveal if it got to this stage?
It's a really good question.
We're literally talking about them because we don't know who it is.
Yeah. I think.
And that could continue.
Yeah. There's so many sort of parallels to BAYC because, you know, they were anon for a really long time or pseudonymous. And the only thing people really knew were their, you know, screen names or their Twitter profiles. And then I guess the thing is, the whole Azuki thing happened like, I don't know, what, 2 months ago, less than 2 months ago. And it's like, do people just forget? It's like, this is, well, I mean, Azuki floor is 10. So, I mean, maybe that doesn't really say much. It's like, maybe people don't care. I would probably try not to reveal as long as possible if I was them. Just, it's sort of, unless they have a real need to, it seems to be working for them. Unless they are, I mean, I really, they're not Yuga, but unless they are like some massive name that will get people hyped. It's like the expectations are so high now that if they come out and be like, oh yeah, you know, we launched a couple of projects that failed, or, you know, we've been around and whatever, if this is our first project, I don't think people are going to be so thrilled and excited. It's like this whole mystery.
They need to be super coders. Otherwise, they don't meet expectations at this point.
Yeah. It's insane.
Or celebrities, theories. You know, the sort of theory.
Oh, that would be wild. Yeah. 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 I don't know. It's going to be curious to just follow and see. Yeah, but it's fun. Like, the first thing you said, it's like this whole Freemint meta, I think, started because they came out. They were a Freemint. They were a fun meme project that kind of shook the bearishness off for a little bit. You know, people were sort of down and depressed and then just having fun. And I think people are still having fun, except now, unfortunately, more and more people are losing money because these effectively rug pull Freemint projects are popping up and disappearing within a few days and taking the secondary market.
You're just hot potatoing.
Mm-hmm. Even more so than usual. It's normally pretty hot potatoy in NFTs, but this is next level.
I guess in like back in the day of last year, at least there was hope that the team who were taking in money would then use that to build something.
Mm.
Whereas right now, these Freemints are taking in nothing and they're getting some from royalties, but the majority of them aren't. You know, the majority aren't breaking 1,000 Ethereum volume, which at 10% would be 100 ETH, which, you know, is what, a couple of people's salary for a few months. If they were to, I don't think that's any Freemint's intention really at this point, because they're all just quick churn them out. If one sticks, that's the one we'll work on of the many, but let's get money, is my view.
Yeah.
Again, a couple of exceptions, but that's the majority of it. And all of that volume is not a free mint. They're just buying an NFT.
Yeah.
Why not mint a higher class project that has a chance, which is where we all made our money back in the day, I guess. You would buy an NFT that you trusted the team of, and then it turns out they kept building until the biggest bull run in NFT history. We did well purely because the team stuck around. The majority of teams that were still building when the bull run came did well.
Yeah. Gives me hope for the next bull run. That's going to be wild.
It should be good, because NFTs won't be a question at that point. Mm-hmm. I guess it depends how the bull run. Is it crypto, or will it be an NFT-led bull run? Will something happen? Like, will Epic take up NFTs in Fortnite in a way? I think NFTs probably need a rebrand. Stop calling them NFTs.
Yeah.
Call them something else and sort of
digital assets. Digital collectibles.
Web 3 our way in. Where was Web 3 in 2018? No one said it. Now every thread says Web 3 point down.
Yeah.
It was an amazing rebrand.
It's gonna be wild when not if the next bull run happens, I think. As you sort of said, NFTs they're inevitable. They're like established. No one sort of questions anymore whether they're a thing or will be a thing. It's like every big brand is now coming into NFTs. Everyone understands the power of the ability to own digital assets. It's mind blowing. Well, I say everyone, but still a tiny percentage of the world, but more and more people are coming around to it, which is exciting.
And the key thing that everyone here now will take into that next bull run mostly won't be your assets. It'll be your experiences of NFTs ahead of everyone else when they all join. So if anyone's listening to this now and you joined in early 2021, I had been building my NFT knowledge for years, and then you came in and were my exit liquidity at that point. However, I was other people's exit liquidity in 2017. So you in 2023, 2024, listener, it could be you exit liquidity and someone else.
It's just the circle of life, right? Just how it goes on.
And
that's so true.
You almost have to experience it as well, just because, like, everyone was too euphoric. I sensed that, but I was selling far too early. I messed the bull run up massively because I was like, this has been the top for months.
But I heard I heard someone say something which is it seems so true to me. It's like you really need it's the third crypto bull run that people really make the big bucks generally, because the first one people get too greedy and then they ride it, they just hold and then the bear market kills them. The second one, because that happened, they get too timid and they say, okay, as soon as it starts going up, I'm taking profits and taking profits, and they miss the crazy exponential gains. And it's the third one that when you've had all that experience and you've seen the patterns and you've seen what happens, you start being a bit smarter. And yeah.
Okay, so the third NFT bull, I've done it wrong both ways. So now I can only go in the middle.
Exactly.
Well, you're just dead inside by then.
Well, yeah. I could talk to you about NFTs for hours and hours and hours, but we do have to wrap the podcast up. I wanted to just throw it back to you. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you want to mention? Anything about Penelope's? Any plugs? Any shout outs? Anything that you'd like people to hear or know?
I guess I'm going to plug Subdomains. I'm going to do it. Lobby your favorite founders to get Subdomains. We've got our Resolver contract out there. People can copy it. Let's get rid of .eth and let's get your favorite project .eth everywhere. Your brand, your favorite project .eth. Let's get it all over Twitter and then start. It's honestly where I'm most excited right now, because you can do things like truly build a community. We can do daily sort of the Cool Cats quest type things, where you go in, you click, you start a transaction, you click a quest that, you know, by this point everyone knows all the quests, they've just clicked them and do the transaction. But what if that was go and like 10 other .pcc.eth tweets? What you're doing is you're making your community talk to each other more. They get to know each other better, they form friendships better, and you're really building it from the bottom up. And I think every project should be doing that. And I want to see all the cool things that others do with it that I haven't thought of, or more accurately, that our dev, who is actually the smart one, hasn't thought of, and just see where that can go.
I love it. I'm thinking about Subdomains for Zen Academy now, and I'm going to talk to smarter people than me and see how we can make that work. All right. So, lobby your favorite project for Subdomains. We'll have links in the description. We'll get the contract, and you know, if anyone wants to look into it or share it with the smart devs, then find it in the show notes. But thank you so much, Carlini. This has been a pleasure. Got to get you back on sometime in the future, because again, we could talk for hours and hours, but just really appreciate your time.
No, thanks for having me on. Very fun.
Thanks for listening to Zen Chats with Zeneca. Please consider subscribing to the podcast so that you are notified of future episodes. Also, make sure to check out our YouTube channel for the video version of this episode. For even more podcasting fun, check out the other podcast I co-host, Two Bored Apes. If you enjoy my content, please consider joining us at Zen Academy, a place where anyone, anywhere, at any level can learn about NFTs and Web3. All of the links are in the description below. I'll catch you next time.